Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta and Gordon. Our daf today, Masechta Bava Metzia, daf ayin, page 70. The Gemara here presents an interesting discussion about the relationship between interest, about ribis, and orphans. Amar Ravanan, Amar Shmuel. So Ravanan said in the name of Shmuel, Ma'ad shel yitomim, mutar lahavlotam beribit. Money that belongs to young orphans can be lent on interest. So in other words, when it comes to an orphan, there sort of is this special exception that's made that basically, as long as the orphans are minors, they don't have to hold by the laws of the Torah. This is how some of the Farchim explain why this is. And therefore, they can actually lend their money out on interest. Now, we know that if it's a minor orphan, they don't actually sort of run their own money, right? There would be a guardian who would do that. But the guardian is allowed to basically charge interest on a loan that they would make with the orphan's money. And so that's, you know, sort of the special law that he gives here. Rav Nachman really disagrees with this and says, Amar le Rav Nachman, right? Mishum tiyat me ninhu. Because they're orphans, safina luku isura, can somebody feed them something forbidden? In other words, he's basically saying, okay, you know, just because they're minors doesn't mean we should like let them do, you wouldn't like feed them non-kosher food. So you're gonna let them make their money in a way that they're not supposed to make their money. Yatome de akle de lab dide. Orphans enjoy that which is not theirs. Lizule batar shivkehu. Right? They deserve to follow their departed one to the grave. In other words, it's a bad thing and they deserve to die, basically. Like this is, but, you know, I don't think he's like trying to curse somebody or wish someone ill, but he's saying like, this doesn't make sense. Like, why would you allow the orphans to do something bad with their money? So, you know, so then he says to Rav Hanan, Amar Lei, says Rav Hanan, Amaili Ezu, right? Tell me now, Gufa de'uvda hechi have, what was the actual case that you were talking about? Amar Lei, so he said to Makud Duda divnei mar ukva. So he said there was a cauldron belonging to the children of Mar Ukva, right? And they were orphans. The Habibe Mar Shmuel, that was in the care of Shmuel. Takil Yahivle, Shmuel would weigh it and give it away, right, on hire, like he would loan it out. Takil Shakile, then he would weigh it again when he took the cauldron back. It was made of some type of metal material, some people say of copper, and take it back, right, when the rental period was over. And you would charge renters if there was any difference, basically, in the weight. Shakil agra v'shakil pechata. And then he took a rental fee and also a payment for the erosion of the cauldron itself. So Rav Hanan says, e agra lo pechata. Now, if one collects a rental fee, right, then he can't collect an erosion fee. Vi pechata lo agra. And if he charges erosion, he shouldn't take a rental fee, right? Because essentially, if you do that, it becomes a form of interest, because the idea is that if you pay rent, that should cover the expense of any erosion, right? And so the renter basically assumes, you know, liability for the object. So the transaction is considered a loan, and therefore the rental fee would amount to charging interest. So that's basically the idea here. So Rav Nachman basically, you know, says to Rav Hanan, because this was his reasoning, was when he saw Shmuel did this, and he did this with an orphan's cauldron, that he was like, oh, okay, he created where he was charging rent and also was charging for the erosion. And since that is considered to be a situation where it's like charging interest, I guess you can charge interest with orphan's money. Amar Leh, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Hanan, Kiha, right, like this type of transaction that happened, I feel a bit Bidiknani Nami Shari Luma Ave may be done even with money of adults, right? This rental fee is basically not considered to be interest. Daha Mikable Alui, because the orphans who own the cauldron accept upon themselves the loss that's caused by Chuscha Denachsha, the deterioration of the copper when it's returned to them. Takama Demakle Nachsha, for the more copper is burned, but Sir Dame, the less it's worth. So really the exception here is the orphans basically suffer damage when the copper is through burning. And therefore, that's why they have to collect this type of extra fee. So once they basically show that the orphans are, you know, so basically Rav Nachum basically says to Rav Hanan, you can't make this conclusion that you think orphans can actually charge interest. So then the Gemara basically says, you know, share something that orphans are allowed to do. Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rav Chista. So Rabba Bar Shila said in the name of Rav Chista, V'imri Lan, some say Amar Rabba Bar Yosef Bar Chama, Amar Rav Sheshes. Rabba Bar Yosef Bar Chana said in the name of Rav Sheshed, Ma'ot Shel Yatomim, money belonging to orphans, Mutar Lahav L'tam, they can be lent out for an investment into an iska, Karov L'schar V'rachok L'hefseid, right? And with an arrangement, basically, the orphans are near to the profit and far from the loss. So in other words, when an orphan's money is invested into an iska, right, with an understanding that basically they'll take a share of the profits, but they will not actually take a share in the losses. And remember what we talked about before is that the standard iska arrangement is that you share the profits as well as equally sharing the losses. So I kind of like the way this passage ends, because like, yes, the topic of our masachet is about interest. And here comes along the Gemara and like reties it back into our other subtopic, which is the topic of iska. But it's also interesting to see the halacha sort of play around with here. You know, should the economics of how an orphan's money, you know, is invested or managed, should that have some special dispensations or enactments that don't apply to other people's money? And I would say, yes, that seems to make sense. But I think the one that Rav Hanan tried to create about interest really seemed like a fetch. I mean, it doesn't seem like it would make sense of why an orphan would be able, or their money would be able to charge interest and nobody else can when it's something that's Aser Min Hatorah. And I think that's why Rav Nachman comes down pretty strong. But you even see Rav Hanan's reasoning is not that great. It's kind of making this big inference from something he saw that Shmuel did.
You know, I actually think it's not so far-fetched. I feel like there's so many leniencies that go into the treatment of orphans because they're orphans, right? So to the idea that maybe this rule of the Torah, that's a Torah law, might not apply to them, I'm not saying that he's made his case well, but the impetus to go ahead with such a like a an exception makes sense to me because the orphans are the exception for so many different kinds of business, financial kinds of cases. Like, let's make things easier on them. They've, you know, they've suffered enough already.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I guess the question to me is like, why didn't he ask Shmuel? You know, like if he saw Shmuel do this, why didn't he ask? But that's kind of my one question on that.
Okay, I hear that. And also, I would say that, you know, a lot of these even loopholes or leniencies that are implemented, that are not subject to debate when it comes to orphans, I don't know to what extent they get implemented in halacha in modernity, right? I mean, I don't know, but I don't hear about it, you know, maybe because we don't really have a halachic state in that way.
Yep. That's possible. Okay, that's interesting.
Okay, we have a mission at the top of Amud Bet. Ein mekablin son barzel miYisrael, mipnei shehu ribit. Now, we're going to again prohibit something because it's going to be ribit interest. Namely, a person cannot accept. A Jew cannot accept from another Jew, a sheep to raise, or other such items, you know, it doesn't have to be a sheep specifically, that you would care for that animal, let's say, or another item, as a guaranteed investment. Meaning, when you have, this is what the Tzonu Barzel is, this idiom that we've used and seen many times before in the context of possessions, right? Where the whole idea is that when you're taking upon yourself responsibility to repay the value of something, and it's got to be the whole value of the thing, regardless of depreciation, for example, but then what happens in the event of profit? And then that's how it kind of becomes a loan, even if the vocabulary wasn't exactly a loan to begin with, right? It says, you know, literally, because it's going to be interest, right? You had a fixed principal, that's what has to be returned. And then any extra that the original owner would receive when you give it back, that extra is going to be rebate. It's going to be like, you know, on top of the value of the thing. Aval, mekablin sonu barzel min anachrim. And here, this is like the loaded statement we've all been waiting for, right? You can, in fact, accept that same kind of guaranteed investment from the non-Jews because there is no prohibition of interest in our transactions with them. Meaning, like, literally here, the Mishnah tells us the thing that is prohibited from a Jew to receive from a Jew is fine to receive from a non-Jew. And that sounds like it's just an exception. But of course, historically, you know, it paved the way for the Jews to become moneylenders and accept interest in getting paid back. Very often they weren't paid back, right? The stereotypes of moneylenders are no good either. But it enabled Jews who, in times when they weren't allowed to own land or, you know, and have benefit from property in that way, to get some kind of, you know, earnings off of the money that they were able to lend. In any case, obviously, this is, you know, it's fodder for a much bigger discussion. The Mishnah goes on. Excuse me. Ulovin mehen umalvin otam ribit. Not only that, you could borrow money from them and you could lend money to them with interest. V'chein beger toshav. And likewise with a ger toshav, meaning a non-Jew who's living in the land of Israel, he was observing the Noahide laws, right? The Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. He's not a convert to Judaism. He's a dweller amongst the Jewish people. And the Mishnah goes on to explain, right, that you can, the loan, right, can take place, let's say this carefully, the Jew can be the lender as a middleman between the non-Jew and his money, and the another Jew, right? As long as the non-Jew himself is aware of this, right? Like he knows it's going on. So again, just inside the text, Malvei Yisrael Ma'otav Shal Nachri Midat HaNachri. The Jew can be the lender, the banker, really, as long as the non-Jew's aware of it. Avalo Midat Yisrael, but not with the knowledge of a Jew, meaning being the middleman doesn't give him enough, like, strength, I suppose, to bring about this loan. The Gemara is going to explain this a bit more. But the bottom line is, I think, excuse me, the bottom line is here again, we're seeing the distinction between the non-Jew and the Jew. All right, we're going to pick up the Gemara. L'neimer d'bershutad d'magbil kaima. The question then is, you know, when you've got this kind of case where you have a guaranteed investment, it's got a very fixed principal, then the value of the property or the item changes rather, and then you're going to get back money in such a way that it's going to be considered interest. The Gemara wants to know, does that mean that the guaranteed investment is in the possession, de bershuta de mekabel kaima? Does he keep it, the recipient? Meaning, is that recipient of the extra considered the owner? Reminu hamekabel tzonu barzel min anachrim vladot pturim min habachura. So the Gemara says, well, we've got a contradiction then in the Mishnah, bringing in the Mishnah not from here, but from Bechorot. It says, if you accept an animal as a guaranteed, meaning a fixed investment from the non-Jews, and then what's going to happen when you end up with the offspring of that same animal, vladot p'turim min habachura, that offspring is not considered, it doesn't have the halachas of a firstborn, bikurim, it doesn't apply. And the reason to bring that as a proof is that the moment you say that the laws of the firstborn animal do not apply to this firstborn animal, the implication is, well, that's because the owner is a non-Jew. And that means that the ownership never left the non-Jew, even though the whole care for this animal right now is in the hands of the Jew. So it answers the question, right? That, you know, is the recipient going to be the owner? And the answer is no, the owner is the owner. And the recipient, you know, is now in a bind because he might be paying the owner interest. Abai says it's not difficult. Amar Abai Lokasha had makabel alay unsa vizola had loki makabel alay unsa vizola. Abai says that in the case in Bechorot, the non-Jewish owner of the sheep is accepting upon himself the responsibility for any losses, losses. Let's say there's an accident. Let's say there's a depreciation, right? All of that, you know, he's accepting that his sheep still belong to him. It's part of the conditions of this deal. In which case, you know, what happens in our Mishnah here? In our Mishnah here, nobody has articulated or stipulated that the owner was going to not accept upon himself the responsibility for the losses, right? So it only, the cases aren't quite parallel because in the one case there's a stipulation and in the other case there's not. Except for the fact that Rava, of course, is going to answer up Abaye. Amar le Rava, Idzikabel alai mara unsid vizola, sona barzel kariat le. Rava's point is like, okay, fine, the owner can accept upon himself responsibility for the losses, but then can you really call that this kind of guaranteed investment? The guaranteed investment implies that he's going to get back that principal regardless of depreciation or an accident or whatever. It seems that the terms are actually, you know, more parallel than Abai wants them to be. And the Gemara goes on here, you know, fleshing out Rava's view, you know, which, whatever, meaning basically at the end of the day, the Rava's view is going to, he comes back to separate between the two cases, but not in the way that Abaye does. And then lastly, we've got a halachic statement. B'chol yad nachri b'emtza patur min ha-b'chura. Anytime you've got the non-Jew involved in the middle, meaning that there's a non-Jewish ownership of the animal going on, then that animal is going to be exempt from all of the halachot, all of the laws that pertain to the firstborn that the Jew would have to handle. Okay, what happens next, and we're not going to take the time for it, but I want to mention it because it will indeed come up for tomorrow's daf as well, is that there's a whole series of agadic statements and discussions over interest, which I think, Yordana, I think we'll probably want to talk about a little bit tomorrow, because it's just interesting the degree to which the Gemara devotes itself to, you know, not just the halachas of interest, which I understand that that's very complicated and needs a lot of fleshing out of the details, but also these agadot are more like the understanding of what's so bad about it, right? And I think we've been waiting for that.
Yeah, so I think that's coming attractions for tomorrow. I think we definitely need to spend some time in that. Like this, the whole issue of interest really holds sort of its own special place in halakha, and also I think because historically Jews often were forced into sort of money lending, you know, jobs. Like that was some of the only thing that Jews could do. And yet at the same time, this is really something we weren't supposed to do. So it really becomes sort of a halakha that I think is very Jewish in its definition. You know, there are other things we do, which like maybe we see in other cultures or communities or religions people do. But there's something about this that really defines us in a way.
I think that's fair. I think that it's also a little difficult, right? I'm not sure that everybody was comfortable being defined by it.
Yes. I think that is true too. Well, that's our top discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this stuff on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.